Hi, everyone. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford, as always, joined by Wes Hodkowitz, and we're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, a Sunday of NFL football, but without the Packers, with Green Bay having played last Thursday night. And as I was paying attention here and there to what was going on in the games and following the score tickers and whatnot, a lot of injuries really ravaged some NFL teams this past weekend, and injuries that had a big impact on Sunday's games with key players leaving. And it just makes you reflect on just what the Packers really have accomplished over these last 2 weeks, weathering this storm of injuries they've had to deal with and posting two home victories over the Bengals and the Bears. And especially when you look at the offensive line situation with not only starters being injured, but backups being injured and having to dig even deeper into the depth chart. And yet with all of that shuffling around up front, the Packers have still scored 62 points on offense in their last two games. It's really pretty remarkable.
It really is, Mike. And first and foremost, if you're a Packer fan out there and you're complaining about the injuries and what's going on in Green Bay, I hope you took that Sunday to watch the NFL in general, because there were a lot of nicks and bruises throughout the league, including one to Dalvin Cook that we'll talk about probably later in the show. But one of the reasons why the Packers, Mike, were able to really stem the tide, so to speak, throughout the loss of their tackles, the loss of Ty Montgomery, was the play of that offensive line, and yeah. It was a makeshift offensive line. You have Lane Taylor working at left tackle. You have, you know, a guy like Justin McCray now, really in his third appearance now at right tackle after being predominantly an interior lineman. And then I want to take a second, too, to look at a guy like Lucas Patrick, who was filling in for Taylor at left guard.
Yeah.
Lucas Patrick is one of the really more interesting stories, I think, on this team, and a lot of people don't know it and they don't understand it. He didn't even sign with the Packers as an undrafted free agent, as an undrafted rookie in 2016. They always sign like 15, 20 players after the draft every year. Patrick came to Green Bay as a tryout player, an invite, in that rookie minicamp in 2016, and it was a few weeks later the Packers actually signed him. He comes into training camp, breaks his hand, has to play with a club throughout the preseason.
And he's trying to learn how to play center,
and too. Trying to learn how to play center.
Snap the ball with a club on his hand.
Yeah, those things don't really work out too hot. So then he ends up landing on the practice squad for a year, and then lo and behold, he comes back this year, stays healthy, and becomes a reserve offensive lineman, thrown into the spotlight in this game against the Chicago Bears, and we've talked before about their defensive front and how stout it is. A really impressive performance by him, and yeah. As Mike McCarthy mentioned on Friday, the job that James Campen and Jeff Blasco, the two offensive line coach for the Packers, have done in preparing that group on a short week, really an exemplary job.
Yeah, and that's a really good point you make about Patrick, with him being a tryout guy as a rookie for that rookie orientation weekend. Because just to put that in perspective a little bit, every year when the Packers have that rookie orientation, I would say they're anywhere from 24 to 36 tryout players,
right,
somewhere in that range, are guys who are brought in strictly on a tryout basis. And then usually, you know, I would say anywhere from 2 to 4 of those guys.
There was one year where they signed one.
Yeah.
I mean, it can be, yeah.
It's real, and that's just to basically stay through the offseason program and training camp and to try to make the roster.
Right.
The only other tryout player that I can recall making the eventually making the 53-man roster, I think, was Jarrett Boykin.
Jarrett Boykin and Brandon Bostic were the two.
Brandon Bostic.
And okay. Boykin was sort of an exception because he actually signed as an undrafted rookie with the Jacksonville Jaguars. They cut him.
Yeah,
during
they
the
released
first
him
week,
right away. Yeah,
and then he ended up coming to Green Bay. So he actually had signed a contract too before that.
Yeah.
But Bostic was another one.
Yeah, and so when you're talking about what Patrick has done here, that he started in Green Bay as a tryout player, and now not only is he on the 53-man roster, but he starts in a Thursday night football game against an arch rival in the Chicago Bears. It really is quite a story and quite a journey. And the fact that this entire, you know, unit up front, you know, didn't become the story in the wrong way for the Packers, which if you're the Bears, you know, that defensive line was in some ways probably licking their chops saying, hey, these guys are really banged up. They don't even know who's playing where. We ought to be able to take advantage of this. And yet the Packers came right out and marched 75 yards in 10 plays and scored a touchdown. That seemed to really boost the confidence of the entire team, and certainly of the play caller, Mike McCarthy, who said, hey, that it was all wait and see through that first drive. And the success of that first drive told him that the plan that they had put in place, both not only with the players involved, but then scheme-wise and what they wanted to do with Aaron Rodgers, it was working, and he was able to stick with it.
Yeah, there were three components to this, Mike. One, it was Mike McCarthy in his play calling. A lot of quick release throws he called for, some rollouts, moving the pocket, a lot of scheme that they did to help out those tackles in particular. Then you look at Aaron Rodgers being able to work with what he has in front of him. He knew he wasn't going to have David Bakhtiari, an all-pro left tackle. He knew he wasn't going to have Brian Bulaga. Tackles that are Pro Bowl caliber players. He was going to be dealing with some guys that are going to be playing out of position. He made that work. He got out of the pocket. He got the ball out quickly. And then, as we already talked about, I mean, the offensive line being able to battle the way they did. And an underrated part of that as well, I want to add, Corey Linsley, the job he did inside. I think this was another example of why he is the type of player he is, really being able to separate himself. His ability to get to the second level, some of the stuff they did in the run game, particularly to that left side, really, I thought, made a difference early on in the Packers being able to establish their momentum and build some of that confidence in those young linemen.
Yeah, and just all the navigation the center has to do with the communication and the calls and make sure everybody's on the same page. That offensive line, all those offensive linemen were given game balls by the coaching staff for that victory. There were some guys on defense who got game balls as well, and we will get to that on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford in this chair, Wes Hodkowitz. In that one, Wes, we mentioned the offensive line got game balls from the coaching staff in the victory over the Bears. On the defensive side of the ball, two game ball recipients, safety Morgan Burnett and linebacker Clay Matthews. And I almost hesitate to say safety Morgan Burnett because the value of this guy to the Packers defense is in the number of different positions that he is playing. I mean, we've seen over the course of his career, he can play the deep safety, he can play the box safety, but now he's also playing inside linebacker, he's playing slot corner. He's doing everything that's been asked. And has he made any huge splash plays, you know, the stuff that jumps off the stat page? No. But his value to this defense is immeasurable right now.
And it's consistency. I mean, there is a lot of value in consistency in the performance he gives you. Personally, I really like this package that they have working for them right now. Obviously, some of it is due to injuries and the like. But for them to get both Josh Jones and Morgan Burnett on the field at the same time in that nitro package, I think is really going to behoove them going forward. This particular game, they ended up using more of that base defense early on just because it made sense with how the Bears were going to run the ball. We talked about that even before the game. You have to stop Jordan Howard. You have to be able to, you know, make them one-dimensional. But as the game wore on and they did pass more, when you see those two working in unison out there, along with Blake Martinez and then Joe Thomas when he was on the field in the dime, that's really where I think you're going to see this team separate itself. It is interesting, though, Mike, because I'm looking at the league now. I watched a little bit of that Minnesota-Detroit game. You see guys, you know, and teams using those safeties now in that role. Yep. I think it was Killebrew from Detroit was kind of playing that role a little bit, too, in that game against the Vikings. So this is the way the league's going. And fortunately for the Packers, they've been on the front end of it with how deep they've gotten at safety. Morgan Burnett obviously being the centerpiece of that.
Yeah, and as we've been talking about all along, what it really comes down to in terms of how much the Packers can continue to use that package you're talking about is can they stop the run with it? And Ezekiel Elliott for the Dallas Cowboys is coming up on Sunday, so that will be a huge challenge there. But getting back again to the Bears game and the game ball winners, you had Clay Matthews as another game ball winner on defense. He sets the franchise all-time sack record with his 75th sack. A couple trivia questions for you, Wes.
All right,
I'm going to put you on the spot. Clay Matthews had not sacked Mike Glennon until Thursday night. So how many quarterbacks now of those 75 sacks has Clay Matthews?
All right,
I counted them up and put it in insider.
Jay Cutler's what, a dozen? I'll go with 25.
Actually, it's 35.
Oh, so, close.
Yeah,
okay.
35 different quarterbacks. But you actually already answered my other trivia question, which is which quarterback has he sacked the most?
Yeah, it's Jay Cutler.
It's Jay Cutler. I believe it's 8.5.
I was going to say, I'm guessing I was a little high on a dozen.
Yeah, 8.5 of his 75 sacks. So that's more than 10% of his sacks have come against Chicago's or former Chicago quarterback Jay Cutler. But really more to the point of Matthews' impact on this game, it was making the game-changing play.
Yeah.
And it happened to be on the first snap of the game for the Bears, but it was a game-changer. It's a sack fumble inside the five-yard line. The Packers get an easy score, and they go up 14-0 6 minutes into the game. and the Packers are just in control from there on. And those are the types of plays. That's the reason Clay Matthews is on the field as much as he is.
Yeah, and it also leads into the Mike Spofford Let's Be Real moment of the week. And that is the fact that when you look at a defense and you have those type of plays, I don't care. Maybe it's up there with a 99-yard touchdown pass or something like that. I think that's the most demoralizing play for an opponent.
Yep.
Is when they're backed up, especially, I mean, you want to add in the extra credit, the fact that it was the first offensive play of the game for the Bears.
Right.
But you're backed up in your own territory, and you have a strip sack for a fumble. I just think, I don't know if it's the competitiveness of that play. I don't know if it's the physicality. I don't know what it is. But that takes the air out of the balloon right away. The Packers then obviously turned that into points. That was really the difference here. I think it was, out of those 35 points, they scored 21 of them coming off of turnovers.
Right.
The offense and defense working in unison, generating opportunities and capitalizing on them, that's ultimately going to get you where you need to go. And it's one of the reasons why Mike McCarthy and Dom Capers have been dedicated to that zone blitz scheme, because of when you do get those game-changing moments, it really does put the offense in the driver's seat the rest of the game.
Yeah, and you mentioned the demoralizing moment of it. I mean, we know, we've been around this long enough, these teams practice the first handful of plays right. they're going to run in a game. They practice them all week long. They are all geared up, especially that very first play. It's, you know, as a coach, as a player, you want the execution to be crisp. This is how we get started. And to have that very first play completely blown up like that, and you're handing the other team 7 points, it really is. I mean, psychologically, it's a killer. It really is.
Yeah, there's no way to really bounce back from it. It's going to be difficult. And fortunately for the Packers, the other aspect of it was, too, is the Bears already were having a hard time with their downfield passing game. They were able to get some yards, but for the most part, that isn't their bread and butter. That's not their wheelhouse.
Right.
They really stress to do that. So, again, I think you look at Clay Matthews and the plays he makes. When you get that kind of difference from him, especially those strip sacks, when you don't have Nick Perry right now at 100% with that hand injury, Ahmad Brooks is getting comfortable. You need Clay Matthews to make those type of plays, and he certainly did that on Thursday night.
Yeah, no question about it. With that, we're going to throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford here, Wes Hodkowitz over there. And Wes, to update the fans, the latest that we've heard on wide receiver Davante Adams after that nasty hit that he took from Danny Trevathan in the Thursday night game. Adams actually went home from the hospital on Friday, was in pretty good spirits, all things considered. Mike McCarthy confirmed that he is in the concussion protocol. Didn't mention any other injuries specifically, at least at this point. We'll see as the week evolves and the Packers get back on the practice field and the injury report is released if there's anything else there. But just really good news to hear that Davante Adams is doing well and his hospital stay was pretty short.
Yeah, and it reminds it, and Aaron Rodgers, I think, is the one that brought it up. It does kind of remind you of the Malachi Dupree play.
Yeah.
Although I think that one was more of a competitive football play, and there was a little bit more gray area on that one. I still feel the Trevathan hit was pretty certain for what was going on there. But in terms of just when you look at Adam's health, I mean, there's so many different layers to this thing. I mean, first and foremost, he's a human being. You don't want to see anyone put in that kind of situation.
Yeah.
He's a big part of this Packers offense. And then I'll be honest with you, too. He's also in a contract year. This is an important year for him on so many different levels. You know, this is an opportunity for him, as he said from the very beginning, to show that he can build upon a really big career year a year ago. So you want to see him be happy, healthy, and obviously have a chance to show what he can do on the field. A play like that, again, as we talked about last week ad nauseum, I mean, there's just no place for it.
Yeah, there definitely isn't. And Danny Trevathan, we find out over the weekend, gets suspended by the NFL for 2 games. I believe he's appealing the suspension.
Yeah, they all do.
Yeah, so we will see exactly when that appeal is resolved and what comes of it. But just any thoughts off the top of your head on the 2-game suspension being the initial decision?
Yeah, Danny Trevathan said all the right things, and I don't believe he's a dirty player. I don't believe that he did this maliciously. I'd like to think he didn't. And by all accounts, from everybody that I know who's covered him in the league, it sounds like he's a pretty decent guy. But at the end of the day, a statement needed to be made by the NFL.
Yep.
You can't have plays like that, Mike. You just can't. You have to train yourself differently. I know it's tough, and there's a lot of bang-bang plays out there in the NFL right now. Me personally, seeing a lot of the stuff, especially at the safety position, what guys have to look out for, I don't think this was one of them.
Yeah.
So two games, to me, it seemed fine. You know, we got to see how Davante Adams is doing in the long run. Hopefully he comes back and everything's good. But, yeah, I mean, it's just it just wasn't called for.
Yeah. I think the interesting thing, and this is me just spiffballing a little bit here, but when you look at the play with Adams, you look at the play with Jamal Williams where he ends up hurting his knee, you wonder if the next phase, perhaps, of the player safety movement is for the whistles to be blown sooner.
I think, yes, I agree with that.
That's something
that's where
that
Jordan Nelson put it.
Yeah, yeah, that's what Nelson said. Other players said that, and that's the part of this that's not being discussed in the national sense right now and not gaining a whole lot of traction. But you wonder if that's maybe the next step in the player safety movement.
100%. You know, Jordy Nelson was very cautious with what he said. He wasn't putting anything on Trevathan. He did admit that those guys have to make bang-bang decisions out there. Everything happens in a millisecond, and then we'd look at it, you know, at negative 54 speed or whatever it is.
Right.
But it really does come down to the officials, and you have, I think, 8 of them out there now. So you do wonder, when the forward progress is stopped, if they can get that whistle in there just a little bit quicker. One, it would also protect the player, and two, it also would make it more clear whether or not a hit like what Danny Trevathan had was, in fact, purely malicious.
Yeah, I think that's something we're going to keep an eye on here going forward. But before we go to a break, Wes, let's take care of a little sponsor business. Picture this. You and a friend are sitting VIP in plush leather recliners watching the Packers on the 50-yard line at Lambeau Field. Nice picture, isn't it? Well, if you enter Cousins Subs Best Seats in the House promotion, you and a guest could win a chance to kick back on the 50-yard line in style. Two pairs of lucky Packers fans will be chosen prior to each home game for this VIP experience. Enter daily now through December 11 by completing the entry form and submitting. For complete rules and eligibility, go to packers.com/best seats. Cousins Subs, we believe in better. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, as we look back at the full slate of Sunday games in Week 4 in the NFL, we mentioned before the injuries that we saw. Quarterbacks Derek Carr in Oakland, Marcus Mariota in Tennessee. You had in Atlanta, you had both Julio Jones and Mohamed Sanu at wide receiver leave with injuries. Minnesota, Dalvin Cook, the star rookie running back, feared he has a torn ACL. Maybe he's out for the year. The injuries piled up all over the league. And then you look at the way some of these results played out. You had the Falcons and the Patriots, both the Super Bowl teams from last year, plus the Cowboys, plus the Vikings, all losing at home.
Right.
You know, not to say that any week in the NFL can't be a crazy week, but it really was quite the week of sort of eye opening results, I guess you'd say.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest one was Buffalo, Sean McDermott. Yeah. I mean, the defense there and his scheme is real. I mean, I think a lot of people have said that over the past number of years, and you know, the lineage that he comes from in terms of his coaching tree. I don't think that's necessarily a surprise, but for them to go in and really treat the Falcons like they did in the Mercedes-Benz Stadium. You and I saw what that place is like, especially with the energy they have earlier this season. Incredible. And a tip of the cap to former Packers defensive back Micah Hyde. Had a whale of a game.
Yeah.
That really helped propel them in that, catching both of the interceptions from Matt Ryan.
Yeah, to hold for Buffalo to go into Atlanta, hold the Falcons to 17 points, get a defensive touchdown, if I'm not mistaken, in that game as well. Their defense was what won that game. And you look at the Los Angeles Rams.
Yeah.
Suddenly they're 3-1. They're the highest scoring offense in the NFL. They go into Dallas. They're down, I believe, 10-11 points early on in that game. They come back from a double digit deficit and end up putting up 35 and beating the Cowboys 35-30. Really impressive job going on there with Sean McVay, the 31-year-old youngest coach in the NFL.
Yeah, and I got to be honest with you, I didn't watch the Rams much last year, so I can't tell you what went wrong or what their offense looked like. But what I do know is stat sheets, and I know how to read them. Todd Gurley's a different player. He looks like he did as a rookie
wow.
again.
Yeah.
A really difference-making back. And I think the one thing that's huge, it's not that they didn't feed him last year. He just didn't get any yards off of it. But when you're able to get him going with more than 20 carries, you get him some touches out of the backfield. This is a guy that can make a difference for you, and I think it's making Jared Goff's life a lot easier as well.
Yeah, no doubt. The Rams using Gurley both as a runner and a receiver, really getting some major impact out of him. Closer to home here with the NFC North, the Lions go into U.S. Bank Stadium in Minneapolis. The Vikings, again, were without Sam Bradford. They lose Dalvin Cook. Minnesota scores just 7 points against that Detroit defense. The Lions didn't do anything spectacular on offense by any means, but they pull out a 14-7 victory. So Detroit 3-1, tied with the Packers at 3-1 atop the NFC North. Minnesota at 2-2, right behind. Can't say there's necessarily any big surprises, except maybe these injuries that the Vikings are dealing with at such crucial positions is really having an impact on the early stages of their season.
Yeah, Mike, there were three things in this game that I want to point out. One, if we had a bigger production budget, we could actually replay my comment from the end of last week where I was like, this game really depends on which Case Keenum shows up.
Yeah.
They got the older Case Keenum, the one that didn't have 369 yards passing. And ultimately, when you do lose Dalvin Cook, that's where you're really going to be – things are going to be tough for you. The second thing that stands out to me is the fact that I can't remember another game where neither quarterback had a touchdown pass. There were no touchdown passes thrown in this game.
Yeah, that doesn't happen very often in today's NFL.
And one more thing, credit to Jim Caldwell's Lions. They went into a tough environment at U.S. Bank Stadium and got a win. I know it wasn't pretty. I know 14 points doesn't always get it done, but it did on this particular Sunday.
Yeah, and the Lions, of course, are still somewhat lamenting the fact that they're, what, 3 inches away, right, so to speak, from being 4-0 and, you know, from winning that game against Atlanta the previous week. But to their credit, they bounced back and went on the road and got a big win when, you know, they spent the week, you know, pretty upset about kind of how things had gone.
Yeah, absolutely. See what happens with Amir Abdullah now. That's their thing.
Yeah, all right. Well, with that, that's a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com on Twitter. He's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford, at Packers for the team account. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.